Hey everybody, here we are, part two with Rick Wheeler from Lion and Lamb Coffee Shop. I had a wonderful, candid, amazing conversation last week with Rick, sharing his story and the entire evolution of what brought him to coffee and why cause-based coffee. I hope you checked it out. If you didn't, you need to listen to that first. Go listen to part one and then jump in. We're going to pick right back up here in part two, where Rick kind of turns the corner around why cause-based coffee, why social business matters, and back into kind of our relationship between Lion and Lamb and Watermark. Is that right, Rick?
Yes, sir.
So we were just talking about social business and profit and how a dollar lives on, and I think that's a beautiful philosophy. We have the same common hope. We have the same common prayer that more businesses will get wind of this, honestly. More businesses, more organizations will realize that it's not, there shouldn't even actually, I think this is part of what you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, but there shouldn't actually be this like sad demarcation or compartment of like nonprofits are the only ones here to rescue the world and businesses are just over here to just take care of themselves. No, like that's not the original definition of capitalism. Like people should win. Human flourishing should go on as a result of our business and our business practices.
Yeah, I just think there's people out there that, and I'm not saying I'm some special guy or anything because I'm doing this. I think it's a very innate feature that a lot of people have is they don't want to see people suffer and they want to help people out. Mm-hmm. I just don't think, I think the system makes it hard for that to happen. And I struggled with this too for almost like a year of figuring out how it would be. You know, when I came to that conclusion of, you know, business would be the best way to address these problems. Mm-hmm. But at the beginning, I was like, okay, we're going to be a nonprofit. So what do I need to do to file? I got to get a lawyer, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And once you hit all those hurdles, it's really demoralizing. Mm. But I think more and more people, we're starting to see it now with companies being, it's called corporate social responsibility.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's not CSR. It's a move in the right direction. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I understand. It's not quite. And the reason
some of those are still just a PR stunt. They're just look at us, refer you to our link. We do some good stuff. And here's our example.
Yeah. It's still, there's still a lot of benefit from it, but there are reasons why it's better to be 100%. And yeah.
Okay. Quick anecdote on that. You've shared your whole life story with us. I had a brief when Riley and I were in grad school studying international development. That was our heart and our dream was to be like these nonprofits you're talking about or government organizations, you know, and do that. And we're working for this wonderful nonprofit. Gosh, I think Giving Children Hope. If that's the real name, I can't believe I just beckoned that back from years ago.
Still around.
And with the kids who are that can't be right. I think Giving Children Hope is the one here based in Orange County, huh?
Not sure.
Anyways, it was in Denver, though. Not for, we were for in Denver, and they were doing containers. They do shipping containers, like entire containers filled with gear, medical supplies and equipment. Awesome, really great people. And part of our jobs is like interns for a summer during grad school was to like just cold calls, and I would full on just call these oil and gas companies, dude, Colorado oil and gas, you know, buku bucks, lots of money, and just be like, hey, and who would I call, what number would I look for, but their corporate social responsibility, like who, the wing that's doing things and giving back, and never really closed, never had a hot lead there. It was a small bar in downtown Denver who ended up writing a check for like $1,000 one time because we did a pub crawl. We did like a full fundraising pub crawl event with some college kids, and they were the one establishment that agreed to like match, you know, basically do a matching gift, and they did. And there's a small hole in the wall, you know, like, you know, kind of dingy pub, but they paid out. So I know what CSR is from those days, corporate social responsibility.
Yeah, it's I'm glad it's trending. But I think that
we can do more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I guess I think just the mentality is business is for the founders, or you know, it's for the people that the businesses are serving. You know, the customers, but you know, the most businesses you start are solving a problem or something, so it's for them. But you know, from a financial standpoint, it's for the owners and the shareholders, and that's what it is. If you're an entrepreneur, like, oh, you want to make money and like good for you, you're going to be very successful and rich. There's nothing wrong with that. At all. I love capitalism. If you want to be as rich as you can be, that's great. But I don't, I just truly believe that business can be an entity or a vehicle rather that people such as myself, and I don't think I'm unique in that mm-hmm. sense of there's plenty of people who I hope to God jump on this wagon that I feel is so awesome and true, is that, hey, I'm just going to start this thing. And, you know, I still need to make a living, and I'm just going to take the bare minimum to do that, from a salary and all that. And, but that doesn't mean that, you aren't being able to live your life. You know, mm-hmm. I think the fear is that, you know, that if you do this and you don't make a profit or whatever, that, you know, are you going to be working nights at, you know, the grocery store or whatever, right. because you're.
And I know you know this because you've read it way more than I have, but actually at that point, that fear or that that overhead or that margin, it's a value-based decision, first of all. And that's what you said when you said we had to go organic. Once we had our cultural DNA locked, the very natural next step was we had to go organic. We had to go to fair trade. We had to do it ethically. There's ethics involved at every phase. If someone comes and says, oh, but like now I'm worried or I'm fearful or I'm not going to make ends meet, the beauty of this, it actually, that doesn't have anything to do with whether you're profit to charities or profit towards, you know, reinvestment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What it has to do with is you have a business problem. Yeah. You have a diagnostic problem in your business, your goods or services that you're selling. Sure. Like that's what you do. Like that person who says, oh no, it's struggling. I'm going to cut back on like being good to people. Man, that's, you're so misplaced. You like, yeah. don't make a cut, raise revenue, yeah, but exactly. by means of like looking at your business.
Yeah. I think that people don't have a good idea of what a nonprofit is and does, mm-hmm. because most people think that nonprofits, like the founders, like they don't, that nobody gets paid at a nonprofit and all totally. This stuff. And
here's like people don't need to
here's
eat.
The
people
news flash, eat. Like people at your favorite nonprofit, and I'm not going to name them. Right. They take a fatty salary, six figures plus, creeping into seven.
Yeah.
Which does bother me. I mean, people, CEOs of hospitals and nonprofits like cancer nonprofits, they're making seven figure salaries.
Uh-huh.
But I think the mentality of people think that nonprofits, they don't pay anyone and they just operate
Just to correct, so people heard you, because you've already been really clear the whole episode, that you don't have a problem with the people getting paid at the top.
No, I don't.
At all. And in fact, they should. The point you're trying to point out, which I think is, I'll give you an illustration, it's so true, because I'm on the church side, and I just read this in an article, it's perfect, is the fact that people don't imagine that. They see nonprofit or they see church and they think
all charity.
Everyone's good, right? Like these guys are all volunteers. Like Bucky, yeah, volunteers, Ben, like you're good, right? Someone else is paying the bill or you're working on the side, right?
Yeah, you have a side job.
Yeah, this person on email recently, or not email, the email is part of the metaphor. This author, church leader, was saying in terms of like why we don't give really at every generation. They like to pick on millennial and Gen Z, but like why don't we give or donate, whether it be a nonprofit or churches, but they're talking about churches in this instance, is like, When we come into a church and we see the experience from beginning to end, doesn't matter which church or what the experience is, whatever is produced and conducted and delivered in that time, it becomes as automatic as our email account. Mm-hmm. It's like Gmail. We never stop to like question who pays for this or how does it sustain itself or how does it churn, how do the wheels churn? We just know it's delivered. We just know it's in there. And so, it's a mindset issue of the consumer, not necessarily.
Yeah, people come up all the time and like ask, oh, how does this even work? Your profits to charity, this and that. And then it's like, hey, this person, you know, has no concept of how nonprofits work in general. We are not a nonprofit, but we operate in the same way.
Right.
And so
first circle, full circle, back to Lion and Lamb.
Yeah.
You operate in the same way.
Yeah. So, so there's a lot of issues I have with all these systems, nonprofits and all that. And so our goal as a social business, and still kind of defining what that is, and this is what I think and kind of what it's been defined as up until now, is, you know, I see the business as I am just pushing the snowball up the hill a bit, because I had, you know, the vision or whatever, the the lack of sanity to do this. And then I'm just going to get to the top and just push it down. And then it's wherever it's for the people at that point. And it's just a vehicle. Like, this isn't my thing. Like, I can't decide in like year two, you know, when our line's like out the door or whatever, and we're just making buku bucks. Like, I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to call it a day, and I want to buy a house in the Keys or whatever. I don't want to be like seen as the owner really of the business, because it's its own organic thing to perpetuate social good. And it's not for me. It's not for Rosie. It's for our cause, which are a few, and maybe I'm definitely going to go do other ones, and I'm definitely going to do other things in my life. But this is what I'm passionate now. And I think it can work. But tying it back to how this all happened with the church and why we're a shop and this and that. And I don't know if I said the piece I said to you at lunch the other day, which was, we kind of got into it in the last episode. You know, when you think, when you donate a dollar to a nonprofit, and I guess we did kind of get into this, but you know, they go and provide a meal for someone, that dollar is gone after that meal, even though that particular incident is needed and necessary and is awesome. I'm not denying that, but there's the other avenue of, you can take that dollar and invest it into a business, a social business that, an example is, something that spawned off from Grameen Bank that Dan and Yogurt did in Bangladesh. The children of Bangladesh are very malnourished, and there's poverty, obviously. So Dan and Yogurt invested in a factory that they put up for free, millions of dollars. The factory produces yogurt that has vitamins put into it and essential nutrients, and they produce it for 4 cents. And they, women work there. They get the yogurt, and whatever they sell, they make a 1 cent profit off of it. But the yogurt factory is still sustainable because they're keeping, you know, it's just like a flat line. They're not going under, they're not going over. So it's producing jobs for the women, and it's getting kids the nutrients. And that's a repetitive cycle that's solving nutrition problems, right? And those dollars get to live forever, in perpetuity, really, in that cycle. And I saw that same thing in this endeavor that we're in now, which is the church coffee shop. Because when we started, the idea from your standpoint was, we want to create a place of community. We want to obviously get more people in our doors. And I was like, yeah, I get that. And this is way back. This is before I decided that it was a good idea. But that sense of, you guys were almost acting in the same way of a social business, of investing in something as a that can live on and affect people in perpetuity versus other things, which are still great. It's the same thing. You know, if the church decides they want to spend, you know, some money on an event that's in the city for, you know, poor people or whatever, that's great. But that money is kind of a one-time thing.
Right.
But for the coffee shop, and it totally aligned with what I wanted to do with it, in that coffee shops are so unique. They're in their own bubble. They're not restaurants. They're this own thing of community and place.
The third place.
And yeah, third place. Shout out Starbucks. but if you are in the coffee space, then you know. But if you're not, then you don't know. Coffee shops can be a place for people that are like really lonely or, you know, hurting. And maybe that 5-minute interaction with the barista that they're friends with before they go to their job that they hate, or, you know, they're going back to their house and their, you know, dad's a jerk or whatever, that's the only place that they're going to get it. And that's really one of the only places they can get it. You know, they're not going to go to sit down at at you know, Chipotle and get that same thing. It's really coffee shops have that unique nucleus of being a community.
Wow.
And so I was like, yeah, the church does need that, because if you think of objectively, what would be a membrane, if you will, to entering a church if you're a newcomer or you're scared or whatever? What would be an easy transition? Coffee shop is numero uno, because you can get plugged in there maybe 6 months or whatever down the line. We're not operating as, you know, if somebody comes up and orders something, I'm not like, hey, come to church on Sunday.
Right.
But we're hoping to set, you know, a good example and have, you know, other Christians in there and yeah, really lead by example.
Right.
And the amount of lives that coffee shops touch are unquantifiable. You never know.
Right.
It's only in those rare circumstances that a customer will say like, hey, you guys helped me out in a hard time or whatever.
Right.
I mean, even at, you know, take the example of me and Rosie, we met at a coffee shop. We're getting married. That was through a coffee shop. And
so cool.
Three other people, Nick met his wife, the owner of True Brew met his wife. She was an employee. Another person just got married. It was a employee and a customer. And then another two employees are getting engaged. And those are just like the easy quantifiable lives that have changed.
Known things. Yeah. The known feedback that finally came back to you.
And when I think of the church in general, not just this church, you know, they're obviously in the business of Jesus Christ and leading people to him, but they're also in the business of changing lives.
That's right.
And helping the people.
Yep.
And so being very objective about this, not because I'm just intimately involved with the process and I want the coffee shop to happen, but this is like at the tippy top of the list of ways that the church can change lives for, you know, years to come through this investment in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And it might not be super easily, you know, quantifiable, but it is 100% going to happen. And also in the same way, the church is going to get their investment back.
Yeah.
Over time,
mm-hmm,
through us paying rent to the church,
mm-hmm,
and that. So you're going to get it back and then have the fruits of what you invested in that's going to carry over.
Right.
So it is a big risk it's not a risk in my mind at all, but I can see from an outsider lens of, you know, why this is odd. Like this isn't a church thing, but honestly, it's, it's genius. and I for sure, shout out to you and Bucky and Sherry and being those radical geniuses of like having that mentality of why this is good and putting that out into the universe and to God, really. And you know, here I am and my humbleness, I guess, but for sure, like I just walked in off the street and literally, and this whole thing happened and nothing's really come of it yet. People can't see the fruits of our labor yet because we're not open, but I'm telling you listeners now that, you know, it's going to be magic. And we're going to change lives for sure.
Yeah.
And that is another total God thing of your guys' faith in that. And I think like two sermons ago, maybe, when you and Bucky were up there and you were talking about Bucky took the chance on you when you were younger and he was like totally hands off and all this stuff, same thing. And you would think like 99 times out of 100 to be like, that's never going to work. As I'm sure you live this experience and Bucky and all that, of like an outsider's perspective is like, don't give Ben like the reins of the church. He's like 22. Like he's not even like a Christian or whatever, you know, whatever you were you know, but it worked because it was God's plan.
Mm.
Shout out Drake. And that's why this worked, to be honest. Mm. And I can't, it's hard to say like without a sense of hubris or arrogance on my end, but like, I feel in a way for sure. I've been groomed for like 8 years to walk into this place and do it. And like, yeah. I felt like I was the guy from day one, but there was no reason to think that on your end or my end.
Sure.
But the reason is because G.O.D.
Yep.
lined it up.
Yes.
And I was like, you know what, man, this is nuts. And so really this process has like totally unleashed for me of just like having that ultimate faith in his plan.
Mm-hmm.
And Bucky's like a huge testament to that. And this whole time, like, this is crazy. Like, they're not trying to micromanage me. Like, aren't they worried that I'm like going to build a bad shop or like, or whatever. And it's like, nah. And it's like, to see that on his end and your end, it's like, dude, these guys trust in God.
Wow.
1,000,000%. And wow. It's like, walk the walk, talk the talk. And I read somewhere or like heard somewhere or something of like, and it really stuck with me, because at the beginning of my ascent out of like anxiety and all that, mm-hmm. I would be put in front of these people who were just like carefree or whatever, or mm-hmm. I wanted to be like them, seemed to have their lives together right. in a way that wasn't from this world or whatever. And the common denominator was like, they're obviously Christians, but they had 100% faith in God and whatever happened was going to happen. And I was like, man, I got to get to that level because they don't have a care in the world.
Mm.
And I'm over here like in, you know, Terribleville. So wow. Let me do that.
Wow. I want what they got.
Huh?
I want what they got.
No, nah, you got it, man. Yeah. you no, got
that's
it.
Good. That's good.
And so
that's how the church should operate, I'm trying to say, is that people should look at the church, meaning its members, yeah. and say, I want what they got. What is that? It should be irresistible. It should be attractive. The word we use around here is it should be beautiful. The bride, which is Jesus' word for the church, should be beautiful. And that's part of your story, which
yeah.
is not lost on me. Regardless of partnerships or relationships or business dealings aside, it's not lost on me. It's beautiful and wonderful for me to hear what you share, Rick, part one and part two, to say there's still one life that matters, even regardless of how many we're both going to reach together in the mm-hmm. city and in the world. Amazing, fantastic. It's never, at least for some months, I can't say that it was day one either. I would be lying if I said that. Day one, God wanted to do something in Rick's heart, and I know he's going to do it through this thing.
Right.
No. But now, for many months now, it's been not been lost on me at all. Just the beauty of how God works on all of our lives, using each other, using relationships, connections, next steps. It'd be worth it enough just to hear what I've heard so far just from you and you and Rosie and just how your lives have been, you know, marked a little bit even through this community or through God, which is great.
Yeah, for sure. But in summary, I'm sure this is like in the Bible, but I heard it said in a way that I really can't remember, but it was, maybe it's just a straight up quote. I don't know, but it was basically goes like this, you know, the more you, it was like, you can be 99% like surrendered to God, but you're never going to like get fully there until like you're at 100%. And I don't know if I'm 100%. I guess not, but I, you know, definitely come from like zero. And the more faith and trust and I have in his plan and, you know, I put out those little risks and they're not actually that little. They're like super huge. And I'm like, even this whole thing, like, I did not want to do this. Like, right. I did not. This was, and I was like, you know what? It just, like, dawned on me with his peace because I went into it, and you know this is, like, facts. I was like, I don't want to do it, and there were many reasons for that. but I totally put it out there to him and to get over that bridge, like, kind of on his back, like Yoda and Luke status, you know? Of like,
that's amazing.
It just opened up more for me, and I'm not saying I'm just like saint or whatever, but every time I've done that, I've been like rewarded.
Yes, in a that works
way, even if it wasn't immediate. And so, yeah, if you are listening to this, trust in yes, that, I guess, dude. Because the I left out like half the story, honestly. It's like probably a 5-hour one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, every time I was at a crossroads, I guess, or a door mm-hmm. that was like wide open,
mm-hmm.
step through.
Yeah.
And it might not be easy just because it's open.
Yeah.
But if you, it's open for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you should take it.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah. Just because it's good doesn't mean it's easy. That's a quote Riley and I love and live by. Just because it's good, the open door is good, but it doesn't mean it's easy. And I love what you're saying there so personally and clearly about trust and trust in God, trust in Jesus, faith, you can use these words interchangeably. It's just like that dollar that lives on and actually has a compounding effect. The more that we test trust, the more that we walk through that door in faith and trust, it feeds on itself. And I feel like even born and raised a Christian, this last couple of years of my life have been a testament of that. And I do believe that's how God works, is that that's how you grow in faith, and you got to feed it just like a muscle. You got to feed it. And so that's how I would paraphrase or translate what you're saying there is, you've been taught and learned a lot recently, your whole life, but up to this very point, to trust and walk through the door. And when you do, your words were, I've been rewarded, and not just in tangible blessings, quote, but like more faith and more trust to do it again. Yeah. And at the next tougher decision or the next tougher, crossroads.
Yeah.
That's how faith works. I believe that.
It would have been really easy for me to been stuck in my house. And I think I actually have a friend who went through the same thing before me, and it was like, you couldn't leave your house. Like, what do you mean? Like, and it was like, I like could not walk like 10 feet from my house without having a full blown panic attack, like on my knees, like freaking out.
Wow.
And I made some progress on my own, but there was absolutely no way that I could have gotten anywhere if I would have taken that on myself and not sought God. And I think in one way that is the reason for suffering in a way,
mm-hmm.
but we have to be aware of that. And it would have been easy for me. And if I did have this, I probably would still be in my house because it'd be like, this is too hard. I can't do it.
Right.
But in a way to come back to God for me, and that's just my story and everyone's going to have theirs.
Mm-hmm.
So be aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, and it's like, it has parallel to like Paul and his, story, I guess, of, him asking God to take away this mystery thing in his life, which a lot of people think is some sort of mental thing.
Mm.
And God's not being rude, saying, hey, I just want you to suffer. But he says, Paul asks him 3 times and he says, no, my grace is sufficient for you.
It's powerful. You felt that firsthand. Yeah, I get it. It's such a powerful truth, Rick. It's so powerful. I get that from your story. I was going to say that back in part one, our last conversation, the way that God used the wall or pain or your lowest moment to reveal himself, you had to, and I've heard it before. I'm thankful because it reminds me of our working theology of pain, our understanding of how God works in pain and suffering is your story. Testimonies like yours remind me, whoa, he's not just an evil pointer finger God. He uses pain. And it was hitting your rock bottom. You said it so clearly back in part one. I'm so thankful for it. I'm going to go back and listen to it myself, but that was in part the reason that you said this can't be for nothing. And that now when you said it, it made me think about our early conversations. I remember a year ago, you shared a version of this, not this detailed, but you shared a version of this. And I remember thinking like, That is so profound that someone could be driven to God through their darkest night because you're forced to ask the question, the cosmic question. It's truly the cosmic question of mankind, which is like, if God doesn't exist, this experiment is insane.
Yeah.
It's so foolish that I'm being tortured for no possible reason. It means meaninglessness. Mm-hmm. That's the accurate answer you have to arrive at. If there's no God, yeah, then there's meaninglessness. And that whole thing of just, we die and we go to the worms and there's no point. And it all feeds on itself, but that's not the point. The point is, man, the way you share that is so powerful because I know you're not alone in it. You know that, but there's someone listening who this is for. And there's other people, like I said, I've heard their stories. I've interviewed them on this church podcast and heard them say, yeah, it was in my sickness. It was in my pain. It was in my low point. It was in my darkness that I clawed back, or God used that, or God beckoned me in that, or whatever. It just even started the quest of questions because he didn't like heal you overnight. He didn't pull you out overnight either. That's very clear.
Taking it one step one step further, really, of, you know, of God saying, you know, hey, I'm not going to take it away.
Yes.
Because back to the verse. It's helping you look to me.
Yeah.
And that,
yes,
you're going to get farther looking to me. And there might be this, you know, without that thorn in your side, as it quotes, mm-hmm, then you might give it up. Mm-hmm. And maybe I would. I don't know.
Yeah, dude.
And so I'm happy as a clam. My, you know, life could not be happier, to be honest. And I was happy before, but there's just, you know, I still have anxiety for sure. But I'm not sad about it, mm-hmm, I guess.
Yeah.
Because if it were up to me again, I would have just had it taken away from moment one, and I would not be anywhere where I am now.
Right. Right.
There you and go. There you go. I am 100 out of 100 happy with my life, even though it has some struggles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just be aware of your life and really just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Frozen.
Oh my God, Frozen shout out. We've given everyone a shout out who could possibly earn one. I love that, Rick. I appreciate that. I love the application of that verse. It's very powerful. That verse is brutal and real and applicable. And thank God, you know, that he kept it in there. He knew what he was doing, keeping that verse in there. It's so big for people, and you so eloquently articulately like you do. I love that. To see you broken, man. I so appreciate your brokenness, and I know it's probably not fun for you, but that's I've got cool. To get this front row seat today just to watch you talk through it and share it with people is powerful. I know God will use it. Lots of people need that verse, man. They need that verse. You're my strength is God to Paul, what Paul heard. My strength is made perfect in weakness.
Yeah.
Or yeah. My strength is made complete is another translation of that passage. My strength, mm-hmm, is complete in your weakness. And then how you marry that idea with how his plan worked out, like even using your weakness along the way. Oh, it's which points to sovereignty, a whole other big idea, how God's in control and he has a plan, a perfect plan.
Yeah.
Very powerful.
And I mean, without this whole thing, I mean, I'd probably be married to my previous girlfriend, and I'd have a fine life, and I'd be a poker player, and I'd be having a good time, but that would be it. And, you know, I'm not this awesome person. I'm not, you know, trying to do this for, you know, personal glory or, mm-hmm, anything, but I know that what we're doing just with the business and, you know, hopefully in the 50 or 60 years I have left on this earth, I can help out, mm-hmm, in some way. And I probably wouldn't have done that without this whole thing. And so much has come from that, mm-hmm, you know, low point. Mm-hmm. So if you are in that, or you've been there and you don't know why or whatever, then seek refuge in that to know that there's something else.
Yeah.
And I think the first step, honestly, is to acknowledge that and not resist in a way. I mean, that's something you do in with anxiety anyway, or life in general, or the metaphor is, if you're trying to, you know, see at the bottom of a muddy pond, you know, if you imagine the shallow lake or something, you want to see the bottom, don't keep stirring it up, trying to move the dirt away. You know, if you're stirring it up, you can't see the bottom.
It's getting muddier.
Right? Just be still and let it settle and let things be how they are. And then you'll be able to see it. So
the proverb or psalm, I can't remember which.
I think it's like a Buddhist thing, but
yeah, well, the pictures, I don't care where it is, it's true. And it's in God's truth of that is, you know, as I was about to say, either found in the Proverbs or Psalms, I think it's Psalms, but be still and know that I'm God. Be still and know that I am God.
Yeah, same thing.
So it's good.
Yeah.
All right, man, as we wind down, is there anything else you wanted to add? Is that the crescendo? It's a pretty powerful crescendo to me.
I'd say, you know, I hope people from Watermark listen to this, and just know that the people who are leading this church are awesome, and I know you're one of them, but to be intimately involved with how things go here and to see decisions we made and to see up close, because I came here not interested in going to the church, and I came here like in my black hoodie and jeans, and I wasn't like trying to impress you and like Bucky and everyone and the elders. I met with all them, and like I'm pretty sure I was wearing my black hoodie, and it spoke volumes to me to be accepted on that level and. But also see from that lens that you might be blurred if you go here or whatever, that have that 100% objectivity to it of like, these guys are in it to win it and they're awesome leaders and they're doing great things that I haven't seen elsewhere. And kind of what I was saying before, I hope you trust them. You, Ben and Bucky and Sherry and the elders, and I've recognized it from day one of things are different here and they're moving different here, and I don't know what the plans are. I'm like, this is your whatever year, and Bucky got into it a couple weeks ago of how it was hard from the beginning, but this is another step, I guess. But it seems like, I don't know, you guys are different.
Yeah.
So if you don't come here and get plugged in to these guys, and they've changed my life for sure, and countless other people again that might not even say. But you know, I came in I wasn't trying to find a church. I wasn't trying to get led by you guys. I didn't make false things in my mind up about you. It was like, this is just the way it was. So
yeah.
Be happy for them, be glad for them. And yeah, you guys are awesome. So,
wow. Thank you for that, Rick. That blesses all of us greatly. And, it's your real thing. You're not being paid to say that. Thank God. But I think as I would wind down and recap what you guys have heard, whether like Rick said, you're a Watermark family member or you're one of our cherished guests, and you're processing and checking it out. Lion and Lamb and Watermark have a common vision. We do. We don't have the same mission statements. There's two distinct organizations, but we have a common vision, which is to see lives tangibly transformed and to see its city transformed. And we're trying to realize that vision together. And so Watermark has this investment with the amazing prophets, so to speak, as generous people have gone before us and donated them to this local church that have accumulated. And we believe that that one of the ways we can go furthest, fastest, make the biggest impact in our immediate surrounding, Corporate Plaza, Costa Mesa, Del Mesa, and beyond, is through investing these funds, a good large sum, into building this coffee shop, for which Lion and Lamb will be the operators, the owners of that business. And we are writing up a building use agreement with them that they will have business hours and a right to claim and use the property where the coffee shop will be. And we will work with them in certain ways to collaborate in certain ways so we can see both of these distinct missions and this common vision accomplished. So thankful for the man. I believe, God, I'm so thankful for these two interviews, man, because the objective to get people to see who you are and who's the man behind Lion and Lamb and who's the person and what is the vision behind this relationship has been very articulated in my mind. And I would just say as an action step, you guys can be praying. Pray for Rick and Rosie. Their upcoming marriage in about 70 days or so.
60
days and counting now. Lion and Lamb as a business organization that has such a good heart and a good will. And be praying for this build project that we could even be breaking ground in this month.
Yeah, please.
Which would be very exciting. Just FYI to all of you community members, that's coming. And mark your calendars because Rick and Rosie, you'll be able to meet them. You can meet them any Sunday here in the lobby. They're serving coffee even today with a proper machine. You can do that now. But also mark your calendars for March 22nd, Sunday. We'll have Rick and Rosie up there and we'll be talking more details, but a shortened version of what you've heard today. So thank you, Rick, for taking the time. It's beautiful to hear you speak and share.
Thank you.
And thank you guys for listening. And we'll see you around this month. Happy Easter. Happy New Year.
Happy Easter.
See you guys. Thanks.